Call the answer line where you're the head honcho, the big cheese, top dog, big man, mighty boss, and you can tell us exactly where to go.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archives.
This is Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International. That's that other station just up the dial interfering with reception again. Hold on a second.
Hey, the frequency's in use!
Right, shall we continue?
There's only one network. Media Network with Jonathan Marks.
Yes, it would be nice if all our frequencies were clear, but in the real world, there's a continual battle for space on the wireless dial. Remember that on September 27th, we expand our European service, so it becomes from 11:30 to 13:25 UTC. Media Network will then air an hour earlier, so around 11:50 UTC on Thursdays. And of course, there'll be a new transmission to North America at 23:30 UTC. Reception reports after the changes a week this coming Sunday will be appreciated. It's interesting to watch the news wires at the moment, how radio and television is developing. In some countries, you see consolidation, like in Italy, where 12 years after private television stations first burst onto the airwaves, the government's finally got around to approving 6 national and 500 local station licences. 300 other stations, many with suspected mafia connections, are now being forced to stop their activities. In Poland, many private radio and television entrepreneurs have given up waiting for new legislation and have taken to the airwaves as pirates. And in South Africa, things are brewing on the media front too.
This is Radio Freedom, the voice of the African National Congress of South Africa, broadcasting from Luanda, capital of the People's Republic of Angola. Good evening, comrades.
During the years when it was banned in South Africa, the African National Congress got airtime from several African countries to broadcast on shortwave back into South Africa. Transmissions from Ethiopia and later Angola and Madagascar were part of an organised media campaign. But now other groups in South Africa are starting to demand their own radio licences. Maisha Jenkins of the Global Exchange Movement in San Francisco, USA, explained that their group is supporting several organisations in South Africa. But I asked her whether this was needed. Isn't the South African Broadcasting Corporation reflecting the changes in the country?
Well, things are getting better in the sense that at least they're being discussed. But things are not getting better in terms of actual access to the airwaves, either radio and TV. The South African government completely controls what goes on the air in South Africa. There is no public access. And at this point, people are organizing to try and be ready for the time when they will be able to have licenses, when the government will be forced to give licenses to community groups, to the democratic forces, even the trade unions, for doing community education kinds of activities. But at this point, all they've got is state-run radio.
Mind you, there are also commercial pop music services like Radio 702, operating from the so-called homelands. They claim they're not government-controlled, but their aim is to make money, and educational programming is not something that attracts huge audiences.
There are several initiatives all over the country, in Durban and Cape Town and Port Elizabeth, with some campus radio stations. In Johannesburg, a women's organization, Speak Magazine, is very involved. And it is not so much the parties, because, of course, the ANC, they have their own radio experience. But we're talking about community folks getting trained and community people, the civic organizations, the women's organizations, the folks who are doing education and health work, the youth having access to the airways in a much more, I think they use the term very much in South Africa, of civil society. So this is what this kind of an effort goes to help develop, civil society.
Bush Radio, a community access station in Cape Town, planned a pirate broadcast a few weeks back to draw attention to its request for an official license. But as Shamil X. Adams explained to me from Cape Town, at the last moment they decided not to risk a raid by the authorities and to concentrate instead on training their broadcasters for when transmissions will be possible. The programmes on community radio stations will have to carry quite a bit of music, though, if they're going to reach young South Africans, no matter what their colour.
I believe that there isn't as yet been enough concerted effort put into developing those communities through music culture and music programmes, etc., etc. I mean, all they've been bombarded with is import culture and commercial, don't worry, be happy kind of music things, etc. So yes, there is a danger for Bush Radio in terms of the kind of competition that there is out there. But I believe because that competition has been a part of the status quo, and we know what status quo has been all about, I feel that status quo and those radio stations do not have the deeper understanding of that, I say with conviction. Whether or not we get a license, we are going to go on air.
Meanwhile, the South African Broadcasting Corporation has announced that its external radio service, Radio RSA, will change its name on October the 1st to Channel Africa. A television service is also to start with the same name on the Intelsat 6 satellite, 24.5 degrees west. Half-hour English and French programmes will air Monday to Friday, starting at 12 hours UTC.
Other networks just tell you when and where. We tell you why. Radio Netherlands, putting the why into wireless.
But wireless hasn't got a why.
It has now.
Bit more news on the new shortwave wireless from Sony, due for launch in November, to be called the ICF SW33. It'll be a PLL synthesizer set with 1 kHz tuning steps and 17 memories. The radio won't cover the entire shortwave spectrum, though. 11 separate broadcast bands have been defined between 3.7 and 26.1 MHz. There doesn't seem to be any SSB on this receiver, but a lot of column inches in the press release are devoted to a built-in clock and sophisticated world timer, similar to the ICF SW55. The price of the 33 will be around $150. We switch now to the subject of propagation and bring up the line to our propagation specialist, Mike Bird, in Melbourne, Australia. Mike, several people have noticed that you've changed something in the propagation report that airs in all but one edition of this programme. You no longer talk about the Fredericksburg A index, but you've started talking about an estimated planetary index instead. Maybe you can explain.
Well, Jonathan, for about 2 years now, I've been thinking about how we could best describe or display the state of the geomagnetic field. It's important that we constantly look at how we do this, as the correlation between the state of the geomagnetic field and the ionosphere is quite a useful one. I believe this correlation is running between 60 and 80%. So what this really means is that when the geomagnetic field is disturbed, there is a good chance that propagation will also be disturbed. Since the middle 80s, when we started the propagation report on Media Network, we have quoted the Fredericksburg A index as a yardstick of how quiet or disturbed the geomagnetic field is. Unfortunately, the magnetic field isn't constant on planet Earth. It varies from region to region and between, say, high and low latitudes. The Fredericksburg Observatory is situated in Virginia in the eastern United States and is often referred to as a good mid-latitude station. Unfortunately, it is a single site and cannot take into account the enormous changes that can take place, say, regionally when a geomagnetic storm is in progress.
Fair enough. I've actually been to the Fredericksburg Observatory. So I suppose this is where the planetary A index comes in, is it? I mean, obviously it's made up of more than one magnetic observatory.
That's correct, Jonathan. The planetary A index is put together with contributions from 12 magnetic observatories spread around the world. Most of them are in the northern hemisphere, but two of them are in the southern, one each in New Zealand and here in Australia. Data from all these observatories is sent to the Institute of Geophysics at Göttingen in Germany, who published the final planetary A index. Unfortunately, there is one big problem with this index. It takes weeks for it to be published. What we really need is a real-time planetary A index.
So this is where the estimated planetary A index comes in.
That's right, and that's where our friends at the United States Air Force Air Weather Service come in. Basically, the United States wants to know whether a disruption to shortwave communications has been caused by a natural event or a strategic event. Because of this, they have developed their own magnetic observatory network. Five stations are used, and they are situated at College in Alaska, Goose Bay in Labrador, Loring Air Force Base in Maine, Boulder, Colorado, and Upper Hayford in the United Kingdom. These five stations or observatories provide real-time magnetic data to the United States Air Force Space Forecast Center at Falcon, which is in Colorado. From there, it's passed to the Space Environment Services Center at Boulder, Colorado, who disseminate it around the world.
But listening to all that, Mike, this index doesn't seem to have a southern hemisphere component.
I know, and it's a serious omission, but it appears the United States Air Force doesn't require a southern hemisphere component. It's only interested in the northern hemisphere strategically. North America, Europe, and the Commonwealth of Independent States appear to be of most interest.
But is there much difference between the Fredericksburg A Index and the estimated planetary A Index?
On certain days, there can be large differences between the two indices. For example, recently the Fredericksburg A index was 17, while the estimated planetary was 47. Take another example. Recently, the Fredericksburg A index was 22, while the estimated planetary was 8. If you're looking for a trend, I'm sorry to say there isn't one. In my opinion, the difference between these two indices is the way they are collected. The estimated planetary A index will always be better than the single-station Fredericksburg index. The use of five observatories, even though they're in high latitudes, provides a better picture of what is going on than a single-station index.
Thanks, Mike. And if the solar terminology is still a mystery to you, remember we have a free guide to what's going on. It's simply called The Solar Guide. Marcel Rommets, a Dutchman who lives in Arnhem, is our guide next. If you recall, he's been travelling.
I visited Thailand for 2 weeks, and I travelled from the north to south in Malaysia, and also made a quick trip to the island of Sumatra, that's Indonesia.
During the trip, he listened out for many shortwave stations, as well as watching the development of satellite television. He was curious as to how the new religious station from High Adventure Ministries was coping with its 50-kilowatt transmitter on the island of Palau.
Please join us at 2200 Universal Time when Malabar's Voice of Hope Asia continues its broadcast day on 11900 kilohertz in a 25-meter band. Please let us know you're listening in by writing to High Adventure's Voice of Hope Asia, P.O. Box 56, Kowloon, Palau, 96940.
I made that recording in Chiang Mai, that's in the north of Thailand, only a few kilometers from the border of Vietnam. And what we hear is the end of the Vietnamese broadcast of KHBN. And I think the signal is rather disappointing.
Okay, but did you visit places where it was quite obvious that radio was still very important?
I visited some of the hill tribes that are living in the border area of Thailand, Laos, and Burma. The only way they get information from outside is via radio. And the Thai government, they operate a local radio station there. But the people also listen a lot to foreign radio stations, because those hill tribes, they live over a vast area also in the other countries. And they can understand the languages from Burma and from Laos. The hill tribe people, they also have rather modern radios. It's very strange to see a thatched hut with a long wire antenna hanging out of it.
You've got some more updates to the recent schedule you had on Media Network about Bhutan.
Recently there was a story about Bhutan testing on a Saturday on 9615 kilohertz. I also heard Bhutan on a Saturday, and that's not listed in the WRTH, but I heard them on 5025 kilohertz on their normal broadcast hours with English news at 1415 UTC.
And they also seem to carry programs from the United Nations.
Yeah, I recently received a schedule of United Nations radio, and I found out that United Nations radio is now available two times a week on Bhutan. And it's heard on Mondays at 16:30 UTC and on Thursdays at 14:30 UTC.
And the frequency of 5025 kilohertz would be the channel to look for.
Yeah. Well, United Nations Radio publishes a list of their broadcasts and how many response they get to it. And Bhutan is now on rank number 4 on that list. So I think they get a lot of response.
What lies behind the truth? Radio Netherlands investigates.
Well, the United States seems to be keen to improve its presence in Asia. On Monday, September 14th, an 11-member bipartisan congressional commission presented its findings in Washington, D.C. The commission chairman, John Hughes, detailed their suggestions to expand shortwave broadcasting to the region.
What we are recommending is a major expansion of U.S. government radio broadcasting to China and a number of other Asian countries, North Korea, Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, because of the unsettled character of that country, and also Burma. Our mandate was to look at the question of broadcasting to communist countries in Asia, but we ourselves added Burma because we think it is one of the most repressive regimes, certainly in the world.
The commission says they think that Asians have the right to the information in the same way that the U.S. government set up surrogate broadcasts from Munich, Germany, to broadcast into Eastern Europe as Radio Free Europe or Radio Liberty in the case of most of the area covered by the former Soviet Union. But naturally, there's something in it for the US too.
It is a fact that wars are not generally begun by democracies. They are begun by dictatorships. And the more democracies there are in this world, clearly that is in the interests of the United States. What kind of broadcasting are we talking about? We're talking about what is known as surrogate or home service broadcasting, objective, uncensored information about the countries to which we are intending to broadcast. Much more local information than, for example, is broadcast by the Voice of America. We would produce the kind of radio broadcast that would be available in those countries if those countries were free. And we are, of course, talking about quality news broadcasting. We're not talking about propaganda and polemics.
Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty say they owe their success to an extensive research operation involving the monitoring of radio and television broadcasts from the countries concerned and a thorough examination of newspapers and literature. But there's nothing quite like that monitoring these new targets in Asia. So what will it cost to establish the project?
We think that on the basis of estimates given us by BIB and the Voice of America, that this project could go forward to the countries we've talked about with startup costs of something a little more than $30 million and annual operating costs of somewhere between $35 and $39 million. This commission does not envisage building an extensive network of transmitters. That would be costly and it would be time-consuming, and the research that the commission has done has made it seem quite clear to us that there is a considerable amount of time available for lease on transmitters around the world. There are transmitters in Russia and Kazakhstan, for example, that our technical experts say would have a very, very good signal into China and may very well be available for lease. And there are other transmitters available, both private and government. The cost of leasing, we think, averages out at about $200 an hour. So we are talking about less than $2 million a year in transmitter lease costs.
From the moment the green light is given, there could be broadcasts on the air within 6 months, gradually building up to full operation 1 year after that. But the commission was divided as to whether all this new broadcasting should just be given over to the Voice of America to do, or whether a separate station should be created.
The majority view on this commission is that the headquarters of this operation should be somewhere in California, in the Los Angeles or San Francisco area, where it could draw on pools of Asian broadcasters and journalists. The commission was unanimous in having reservations about the working title that has been given this project, Radio Free Asia. That has some problems of translation into Chinese and other languages. It is very similar to some other broadcasts that emanate from Asia, and so we have suggested as an alternative Asia Information Radio or Asia Democracy Radio, but there certainly could be discussion about other possibilities.
But why bother? After all, some 30 countries broadcast towards China already. And if you do the sums, it turns out that means 350 hours of broadcasting a day. However, only 10% of that is in Mandarin Chinese. News broadcasts are 1% of that, and news broadcasts concerning issues in China is about 1% of that 1%. The Commission assumes that the countries being targeted will start objecting. But China is one Asian country, along with Burma, that jams certain foreign broadcasts. Won't Beijing use noise to retaliate?
Their resources for jamming are rather limited. Obviously, they would be doing more against VOA if they could, and so there's a limit to the amount of power they can devote to this. We were also asked to consider the question of what neighboring countries think about this, and I think it's fair to assume that a small country, which sits alongside China, is going to be circumspect in its response, but we perceived no major objections on our visit to Asia.
Not surprisingly, refugees in Asia, as well as Asians living in the United States, are very supportive of this move. Mel Goldman, who's professor of Chinese history at Boston University and a distinguished China specialist, outlined why, in the course of the study, she decided expanding the airtime on the Voice of America is the best solution, rather than setting up a new station.
I wasn't sure where I stood. And in April, I went to China, and I happened to turn on VOA in Mandarin. And I found that they were doing extraordinary broadcasting about what's happening internally in China. And more extraordinary to me was I was with a delegation from the Council on Foreign Relations. We met with Li Peng, and one of Li Peng's advisors quoted to us from what VOA had said that day, as did the various dissidents who I interviewed when I was in China. So I came to the conclusion, and what puts me in the minority here, is that VOA has a credibility there, which I really hadn't anticipated. In other words, from the establishment, from the Communist Party leadership, with the dissidents as well, enhancing what already works, what already is listened to, which has legitimacy, makes more sense than setting up a new program, which they told me they would consider a propaganda agency, and the dissidents told me that as well.
The report has now gone to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, who on Tuesday, September 15th, turned to the Voice of America and Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, for their views. Both organisations would like to run it, but VOA argues that it has correspondents in the region already, and Director Chase Untermyer says that some of the details in the report were misleading.
The Commission report quotes a report of the Federal Communications Commission, which very blithely says that the Voice of America transmitters in the Philippines, Thailand, and California could easily and immediately be turned over to the purpose of broadcasting to China. I don't know who they talked to. I know for a fact they did not talk to our engineers. If they had, they would learn that there is no excess Voice of America transmitting capacity. We're working around the clock right now using the money the Congress has been kind enough to give to increase the transmitting capacity in places like Sri Lanka and Thailand. Until they come online, which will not be 1994, 1995 at the earliest, there is no excess capacity on our transmitters in order to broadcast a totally new service.
The Chinese news agency has reported the progress in Washington towards the start of Asia Information Radio, but has not commented so far. Now back to Radio Netherlands.
The girls will have you
bewitched, bothered and bewildered.
From September 27th, east of Edam.
With Dira Sujan and Maggie Eyre, of course. And East of Edam will be heard henceforth in North America on the new 2330 UTC transmission Sunday nights. Last week's announcement that Radio Netherlands was planning to hire airtime on Russian transmitters prompted calls to our answer line asking if we're planning television broadcasts like the BBC. No money for that, I'm afraid, although we do have a TV department which produces items for the CNN World Report programme. Meanwhile, Deutsche Welle Television in Berlin is expanding at the moment.
That's it from us for now for another hour and a half. Thank you for joining us. Auf Wiedersehen.
Test transmissions on the Intelsat K satellite transponder H7, 11.605 gigahertz, are going out with pictures in NTSC and sound on 6.2 megahertz. Deutsche Welle Radio is also heard on the subcarriers, the German programmes on 7.02 megahertz and the foreign language service on 7.20 megahertz. Peter Zenger of the Deutsche Welle in Cologne tells me they plan to expand their TV service in November, plus hire airtime on a US domestic satellite so they can reach both North and South America.
At the moment we have 1.5 hour in German and 1.5 hour in English, and we will add it up by 1/2 hour in Spanish. And this will be repeated several times, maybe during the day. After North and South America, we might start by the end of this year or beginning of next year broadcast to Asia. The only problem is there's limited space on the only satellite which is really received, which is the AsiaSat-1. But maybe we find a time sharing with somebody who is not using all the time of his transponder. And when AsiaSat-2 is coming up, we think we should use this one for distribution of our programs through all of Asia.
Is there a lot of response in terms of the television here in Europe, in terms of inquiries about where it is on which transponder from a technical side?
Yeah, to give you just an information, we started 1st of April with a transmission, and we informed the public only 2 or 3 weeks before this date, and we received until the end of May only 400 letters concerning television via satellite, which is quite a lot. But not only from Europe, but from all over the world.
So it's never going to be scrambled like some of the other services, including the BBC?
No, our signal will be always free, and it is free for rebroadcasting, like we do it already now in Europe. Only we have to make a contract about it because of the rights for the program content.
Phone the Radio Netherlands answer line now. Dial 31 for Holland, 35 for Hilversum, then 724-222. And don't even think about reversing the charges.
Packed a shortwave and a few listening tips from Arthur Cushion in Invercargill, New Zealand. Arthur.
The Philippines is providing us with good signals, particularly during our afternoon here, which is the 02:30, 03:30, and the broadcast is in English, and it's on 17760, 17840, and 21580. The other transmission, 17:30 to 19:30, that's in Filipino, and that's on 15190, 17840, and 21455. And here's a recording of a typical announcement around 02:30 on the frequency 21580.
You're listening to the English service of Radio Filipinas, broadcasting from 02:30 hours to 03:30 hours UTC on the frequencies of 17.76.
There's some good news from Tonga. This month they should be back on the air on shortwave. A3Z should be operating on 5030 up to sign off at 1000. According to the chief engineer, they're just about ready to go. And Chris Rogers of Melbourne, who's been in touch with the station, advises that information in DX is calling.
So, thank you, Arthur. Very good news. But our next caller from England has found a transmitter that's been doing some very strange things.
Hello, Jonathan. It's Phil Perkins at 1300 UTC on Monday the 9th. Just listening around the 17 meg band, and there's been these splotty, squitty things for a little while now. Tracked it down to another Radio Moscow on 17745. If you just take a listen to it, you'll it's really going gibonkers.
And here's something very drastically wrong with that particular transmitter. That's all for this edition of Media Network. Join us in 7 days for more from the world of wireless.
Copyright 1992. Human rights preserved.
I've been doing some listening between 3 and 30 megawatts. It's, some people get static, some people get far off countries. I just get a headache.
Serving the universe from Flevo, Radio Netherlands, with relays in Russia, Bonaire, and Madagascar. Any questions?
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.